Hello, folks, and welcome to the Metallica Report. I'm Stefan Shirazi, editor of the band So What magazine.
And I'm Renee Richardson, director of philanthropy for Metallica's foundation, All Within My Hands. This is your official weekly Metallica podcast, the only inside source, bringing you all the news from the band's HQ and studios deep in the heart of Northern California. All right, first things first. Steph, what the fuck are you doing here?
I know. Look, I'm meant to be away on a mission this week, but honestly, I'm so excited by getting the man I think Metallica would tell you is one of, if not the riff lords of all time, Brian Tatler, to sit down and have a chat with us, that I wanted to make sure I said that before you all sit down and check it out.
I know, you bugged us about this incessantly for days, but yes, it is absolutely true. Brian is an incredible interview to get. He's currently touring as a member of Saxon, another one of Metallica's heroes, but it was his first and still active band, Diamond Head, that provided all kinds of inspiration to Lars and to Metallica's early sound.
Yeah, I mean, look, in all honesty, it was just a nerd out chat. I was nerding out big time with Brian here. It was great. It was so much fun. We really got into it. And Brian will be talking us through those early days of Diamond Head, Lars and Metallica, the architecture of both the riff and some Diamond Head classics, as well as sharing who his favorite riff lords are.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Some of those Lars memories are amazing. And now, if we can just keep quiet, we can start listening.
I really wanted to start this conversation at the beginning. A good place to start any conversation, I think. But in this case, what I'm talking about is, you know, you're very much a progenitor of the new wave of British heavy metal and well known as, and I think your history in terms of influence with Metallica is known, and we will dig into that a little bit. But I wanted to ask you as a kid, you know, what got you on the track to wanting to riff, actually, more than just play guitars? Because I think you're riffing. Yeah. I mean, let's face it, you are the riff master, right? So what got you on the track?
I think it's probably listening to bands like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, who are riff-based. So my older brother David played guitar, and he got me interested in the guitar, and he wanted me to learn from the age of 11. He started, you know, trying to get me to learn, and I didn't. I didn't really get into it till late 14, into 15 years old. And then I formed Diamond Head when I was still at school with the other school friends, you know, people from my year or people I knew. You know, the first album I ever bought was Led Zeppelin 2, and the second album I ever bought was Deep Purple's Machine Head. So there's a lot of riffs and some amazing songs on those albums, and I think I was off to a good start there. Plus, I had access to my brother's record company, and I probably worked out, once I could move a bar chord up and down the neck, I could, you know, I could play Iron Man, you know, or I could have go Smoke on the Water or something. And yeah. I didn't want to be, I mean, you know, I liked Richie Blackmore. I mean, he's a big influence and Page, but I probably thought, I can't play like that. I'm not Richie Blackmore. I'm not an absolute genius. And so I probably got into riffing as a way of just trying to sound good, trying to come up with ideas, trying to get a song together, really. And so I'd be there trying to come up with a heavy riff. And a song like Symptom of the Universe, which is a very simple riff and easy to play for me. You know, I'm a beginner, but I can manage a song like Symptom of the Universe. And so maybe that was part of it, that I didn't think, well, I'm going to be the greatest lead guitarist in the world. But I wanted to write songs. And we'd got this band together pretty quickly. In June 1976, we formed Diamond Head. So the first thing we had to do is write songs. It's no good just having a solo or going widdly widdly. So you've got to write a song. And that's the first thing we did. We didn't bother about learning covers because we couldn't play them anyway, and we didn't know how to play them. So we just started with very simple heavy metal songs.
Wow. You didn't play covers. You started straight out of the gate.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't play them. We'd have a go at Ripper by Priest. There's a couple of songs we'd have a go at, but we'd sort of fail. And we did Paranoid live a couple of times, and we did, I think we did Motorhead once.
Yeah.
And I can remember Sean reading the lyrics as we were doing it live. I'm moving like a parallelogram, you know. And So we did a couple of covers live because we thought we want to go down well. So we'd probably have one or two for the end of the set. But yeah, we just weren't very good at covers. So we didn't go there really. We thought we could write our own. We had a cassette recorder and we'd record a song and we'd analyze it and we'd say, oh, that bit's good. You know, or, I don't like that verse. So we'd try and write something better than that. And I think just by trial and error and determination, we got better and better and better. And got good at writing songs.
So for you, the archaeology of a riff came about from, as you quite eloquently said, no, not too much widdly-widdly, you want to write songs. And it was your way of getting into songwriting was to find that hook. And Symptom of the Universe, what a great example. Can you think of a couple of others that you'd name check off the bat that were like, for you, prime examples?
The Black Sabbath catalogue, it was important, you know, like a War Pigs or Supernaut. But also Zeppelin. I do think Jimmy Page is one of the greatest riff writers of all time. Things like Heartbreaker and Ramble On. Dazed and Confused is a mighty riff.
It's very interesting because, you know, people think of Jimmy Page as, you know, you think of him as like one of the greatest lead guitarists of all time, obviously, but,
he's a writer. I think that's what I took from Page more than anything else. He was a great writer. And I like the fact that he could produce and he could play a bit of folk, a bit of acoustic, different styles of blues, a slide. His knowledge of the guitar and what he put down on record, his layers and his production and sounds was phenomenal.
I've got to ask you about probably your most famous riff. I mean, It's Electric, just a phenomenal, phenomenal, timeless riff.
That's one of the first songs we wrote that I made it onto record. And I think I kept a list of all these songs. It's not 100% accurate, but I think that was about number song 43. Right. And I think Sean and I wrote that song in 1978. And the reason it's shaped like it is, I saw AC/DC on the Old Grey Whistle Test perform Problem Child, and it was brilliant. It was probably from some Australian TV show or something. And I liked the gaps in the riff. It wasn't do 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 do. It was bow down, bow down. The gaps and the space for the snare. And I had not really noticed that before. And I thought, that's so powerful and raw. So I thought we should write a song like Problem Child. So get the guitar out and try and come up with something like that. So, you know, we came up with Dirty. So it's sort of our attempt at writing an AC/DC song.
Really?
And of course, Sean came up with a fantastic vocal and a great title, It's Electric. And it became very popular live. You know, we'd do it live and it would have a lot of energy. That's that song.
We should, by the way, just mention for people who don't know, when we say Sean, we're talking about Sean Harris, who was
the writing partner
at the time.
Couldn't have done it without him.
Let me ask you to do something here right now. Why don't you select a Diamond Head song that contains one of your favorite riffs for us to play right now?
Am I Evil is pretty much my favourite riff, I think.
Folks, if you haven't heard the riff to Am I Evil, courtesy of the man who wrote it, here it is.
All right, let's talk Factor Meals for a second. Steph, why don't you talk soccer?
Oh, great. Well, every Tuesday, I run myself into the ground and afterwards I end up ravenous. It's a lot of work out there. And, you know, when you finish a game, you've got to eat quickly. You've got to eat well, which is not easy to do. But Factor Meals saved me last week because within 30 minutes of the final whistle, I was enjoying one of Factor Meals' chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, pre-prepared meals. They're delivered to your door. They're ready to heat and eat whenever you are. And in this case, they ticked every necessary box for me.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Factor Meals has many options, 35 different options to be precise, and it ranges from whatever you're into, keto, calorie smart, vegan to veggie. In minutes, you will have a delicious meal that's full of flavor. Factor Meals, these are restaurant quality. They make you feel good about what you're eating.
Yeah. And by the way, Factor Meals is less expensive than takeout, and it's also much healthier. So what's not to like about that? Head to factormeals.com, Metallica50, and use code Metallica50 because you will then get 50% off.
That's super easy to remember. The code is Metallica50 at factormeals.com, Metallica50, to get 50% off.
The Metallica Report is sponsored by BetterHelp. Christian Swain here, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Archaeologist. I hope you're doing well. I know some days are better than others, but if today is not as good as you'd hope for, then it might be worth looking at some online therapy. And we have a special offer for you. As some of you know, I was in a pretty bad situation after a mass shooting took place while I was performing with my band in 2019. Afterwards, I needed to seek some therapy, and it really helped. I was better for the time I spent talking through those feelings I was having about the memories of the event. Since then, I have engaged in more talk therapy when I need it, and now I'm using BetterHelp. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. What I personally like about BetterHelp is that it is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime at no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Metallica today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Metallica.
And that was the main riff to Am I Evil. There's so many great riffs from Diamond Head and The Hand of Tatler, if I may say. But someone else was noticing these great riffs too. A chap from Denmark who suddenly pops up on your door. The story is well known. Lars did come to visit you in Stourbridge. I mean, I think you thought he was visiting, but he ended up crashing a long time, right? Talk a bit about what you remember.
So he didn't come to my house straight away. So, of course, first of all, he bought the album, mail order, because we advertised it in Sounds. We hadn't got a record deal. We did 1,000 copies, and the manager decided to put an advert in Sounds. And you could buy it £3.50. And Lars must have been getting a copy of Sounds in LA and sent for the album. And we remember saying, oh, we've got a fan in America. We've only got one. And his name's Lars Ulrich. How about that? So we sent the album to Lars. He must have liked it. And he wrote back to the same address, which was our like, fan club address, and said, I love the album, and I'm coming over to see you guys in July 1981, because we've got a tour booked. And he duly turned up at the Woolwich Odeon in London, and he's 17. And we must have had a little communication by the fan club or something. And so when he came, we were just blown away that this 17-year-old lad had made such a massive effort to come over to see Diamond Head. We thought, no one's ever come to see Diamond Head before from America. Wow. So we liked him instantly. And then we...
of course, yeah.
We said, this was the end of the tour. So we were all then going to go back home. We're all in Stourbridge. And then Lars jumped in the car with us. I'm sure I said to him, where are you staying? And he either said, I don't know, or he got somewhere in London. He a bed and breakfast or something. But it's rather than that, he jumped in the car and came back. And I think we all just thought his enthusiasm and the fact that he'd come all this way, and he's only 17, we took to him. I'm still living with my parents. I'm only 20 or 21 at this point. And he slept on the floor in my bedroom in my brother's old sleeping bag for a week. And then he moved over to Sean's house. And again, Sean's still living with his mom. And he slept on the sofa. And he was there for about 3 or 4 weeks. And Sean used to say, get up in the night and raid the fridge. You know, where's all the bread gone? Things like that.
Amazing.
And Sean said he'd wake up. And Lars would be listening on headphones to It's Electric over and over again.
Wow. That's tremendous. What great stuff. Did you become aware of Metallica forming and growing and the influence that they were taking from your music? Was that something you were aware of early on?
So obviously Lars wrote me a letter, because I've said this before. In 82, he wrote me a letter saying, how's it going, etc. Thank you for putting me up and appreciated, blah, blah, blah. And he said, I've got a band together and it's pretty fast, you know, that kind of thing. And it's called Metallica. You know, the heavens didn't open. I just thought, oh, that's nice. And Lars has formed a band. Well, he never mentioned it. Lars never said, I play the drums, or he never said, I'm going to be in a band or anything. He just seemed like an uber fan. So, yeah, that went on. I didn't think that much would come of it, as you don't, because I know lots of people in bands, and usually they split up after a bit. Lucky if you make one single, aren't you? So he sent a demo that they'd done, and I think they'd covered It's Electric, but I can't remember for sure. I think Sean had the cassette. I can't remember what happened to that. But as time went on, you know, we did stay in touch. We'd do a bit of fan, you know, what's it called? Pen pals.
Yeah.
And he'd say things like, you know, we've got a gig coming up in Denmark or something. And they got on that album with Metal Blade.
Yeah.
Things like that. So I'm just, in a way, humouring him, because I like the guy, but I have no clue that they're going to become the biggest metal band of all time. No idea. Then he phones me in 1984 and says, we want to cover Am I Evil? Can you send me the lyrics? And I'm, oh, okay. So I faxed him the lyrics.
Right.
And next thing you know, he sends me a copy of the Creeping Death 12-inch single on Music for Nations.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has Am I Evil on the B-side, along with Blitzkrieg. We played, me and Sean listened to it, and we think, oh, good. You know, they've worked it out. The solo, it's very respectful. Yeah. It sounds good. It's powerful. It's tight. Fair play, you know. Yeah. So that happened. We didn't think. We still don't think they're going to conquer the world. Not a clue. And they're only on a little label, aren't they? You know, Diamond is on MCA. You know, we're doing our third album, Canterbury. And Lars's band are on Music for Nation. So we probably still thought we were higher up the ladder.
Of course.
And on it goes. And then I'd start seeing the name in press all the time and thinking, oh, they're doing ever so well, Metallica. And then again in 86, Lars calls to say, we're playing Birmingham Odeon on the Master of Puppets tour. Come down, you know, I'll put your name on the door. I caught the bus into Birmingham, the number 9, and turned up. And a road crew guy took me backstage, introduced me. Lars introduced me to James, Kirk, and Cliff, which was lovely. Yeah. So I got to meet Cliff Burton.
Brilliant.
And he said, come up on stage and do Am I Evil with us. Oh, okay. I haven't got a guitar. He said, well, play James's guitar. So we did that. We did Am I Evil. You know, it was all coming at me quite fast. You know, I thought it was nice to play Birmingham Odeon again. I'd already played it twice. Yeah. It was our big gig in the middle. So I'd seen all the greats. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of Lars and I are friends. Lars has asked me to play with his band. Least I can do. I remember watching them open with possibly Battery, and I thought, good grief, so fast. And how on earth could they possibly play that fast?
So you know? Played with, and so you played a song with Cliff Burton as well. That's a big deal.
I mean, I realized later that I'm honored to have had that moment, on stage with Cliff Burton, who's become an iconic bass player.
Of course, I think one of the greatest things as well in recent years is you did come back to pay tribute to the band that basically used you as a springboard for everything they've done. And I'm assuming that No Remorse is, I mean, the choice alone suggests it's one of your favourite songs. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, I wanted to do something off Kill 'Em All. I didn't want to go forward and do, you know, the Black Album or anything. A couple of people said, why don't you do Sad But True or something? But I thought, no. We should do something, because they covered the first Diamond in the album, Lightning to the Nations. We should cover Kill 'Em All. So I selected No Remorse because I thought it had a Diamond Head quality to it. It's a bit of Diamond Head DNA in the riffing and the writing. And I said, let's try that one. Everybody's got to learn it, you know, do your homework. We'll turn up at rehearsal. And when we started playing it, it sounded great straight away. And we all went, oh, that's great. That's going to be great. So call off the dogs, you know, that's it. We'll do No Remorse.
And what a good opportunity we have right now to play a little bit of that version for people. So 3, 2, 1.
I really wanted Metallica to hear our version, and you know, we sent them copies, and Lars commented, said he was honoured that we covered him in a way, you know, after all these years.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we talk about history, and we were talking about earlier on about, you know, Metallica and their early days, and you're hearing about this band from America, and of course, you know, that they were in LA at that time, and one of the first shows they ever did was with Saxon. That was one of their very early shows.
Yeah, and they played like four Diamond Head songs in
that's
the set.
That's right. Preach. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And here you are now, a member of Saxon. I mean, I assume, just to clarify, you know, Diamond Head will pick up as and when it needs to.
Yeah. Yes. We're sort of pausing for this year because the Saxon's schedule is very busy. Yeah. Right now, I'm in Frankfurt, and we've just done 6 gigs with Judas Priest in the UK and Ireland. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really busy, and I'm loving it. I got offered the gig in March of last year, and of course I said, yes, please, and I learnt the set, and away we go. It's great. I'm really loving it.
I should be ending on a lighter question, but I'm going to end on one of these. When you are writing a riff, whether it be one of the newer ones, whether it be something for Saxon, whether it has been an It's Electric or an Am I Evil, as you're writing it, can you really feel that it's as special as it is? Do you feel the special ones over the good ones? I mean, do you have in your head a grading system and you're like, that's the one. That is just fucking so.
I think it's time. That's what I've come to realize, that I come up with a riff because I practice every day, and very often your fingers will land on something. Think, oh, that's good. Record it immediately, because I will forget it in minutes if I don't record it. And then I review the tapes, and I'll come back to the tapes, and I think, that's a good riff, or nah. And I, you know, very often, I mean, I do it on my phone now, so I can just delete it if I don't like it. But I come back to riffs, and sometimes I've got riffs that I've had for years, but I can't use them. I don't have a vehicle for them. Nothing else is coming. It's just a riff. So I come back to them and I think, if I still like it fresh in the cold light of day, then it must have something. And then that's the ones I work on, the ones that I can reconnect with. I think, oh, I like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's the reconnection process. What I am going to say is thanks very much for joining us from a hotel room in Frankfurt, did you say?
Frankfurt.
Yes, a hotel room in Frankfurt. So really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stefan.
And also thank you for the music, mate. And long may it continue.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right, mate. Brilliant.
Wasn't that so cool? A big thank you to Brian Tatler from Diamond Head and now Saxon for sitting down and hanging with Steph and sharing just so many fantastic stories with us. I know we are going to have him back on a future episode, so that's something to look forward to. And one more quick thing before we go. This is really fun. Metallica's in the running for a Webby Award this year, the 28th annual Webby Awards, where you decide the best of the internet. I know it sounds like a tall task, but you can do it. Metallica is up for one in the website design music category. category, and you can do your voting by going to vote.webbyawards.com in the music category. And that voting is going on through April 18th. And with that, see ya.
The Metallica Report is produced by Metallica HQ, Pantheon Media, and PopCult.
If you like what we're doing here, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to visit Metallica.com/podcast to submit your questions, offer your thoughts, and become a part of this podcast.
Copyright 2023, all rights reserved.